from Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in recently renovated Minneapolis. This is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk games and games development.
I'm Steve McGregor, and I make nice games.
I'm Ian Peters, and I make nice games.
And I'm Lydia Simchich, and I too make nice games.
For this week's episode, our topics are cozy games and fast travel. And so, if everyone is ready, let's start.
Woo!
Hello.
Hello.
We're back.
We are.
Lydia breathed a sigh of relief because we had technical issues when we were recording this because Mark is still on his cruise.
Yeah.
All right.
Welcome back, Ian. Hi.
Hello. It's my third episode.
Yes.
Yeah, we kind of threw you into it, huh? Right
yeah.
Away.
It's fun. It's fun. I like it here.
Yeah, you do a good job.
The clubhouse is cozy. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Are you also in the vents with Sam?
No, I live with you.
Oh, yeah.
You know this.
In your vents.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. no, the clubhouse is nice. I'm glad to be here again. I think this is my last episode for the foreseeable future, but
yes,
it has been fun so far. Since the last time I was on, we went to Con of the North, which was the tabletop and board game convention in the Twin Cities.
Mm-hmm. Typically, it was in Plymouth. They recently moved because they outgrew the hotel where they had been doing it since forever. So then it was in Bloomington.
Yeah, I quite like the new venue.
Yeah, it was nice because it's easier to not get lost.
Yeah, no, I liked the venue, and it's a good convention. I like it a lot. It's a good community.
Explain what Con of the North is?
Yeah, so board games. It's board gaming and tabletop gaming.
Although they do have some, they have card games, board games. They also have a LAN set up every year, so they just have a room of computers where you can play LAN games.
Yeah,
that's fun.
Yeah, it's. I mostly go to try like independent tabletop games, like TTRPGs, mostly. It's very fun, though, because there will be game developers who bring prototypes of their board games. Mm-hmm. I've played, I think 2 years ago, I played a prototype of a game called Caps and Stems, which was described at the time as mushrooms, like an engine-building mushroom game. You build, like, a colony. A colony of mushrooms to power up other mushrooms, and you gain your victory points based on certain attributes. And they finally hit Kickstarter, I think, at the end of last year.
Okay.
So that was pretty fun. If I can find it again, I'll put that in the show notes. It was a pretty entertaining game at the time. It's interesting, though, because you get the same developers coming back year over year, and you will see massive changes in the games in those years.
Yeah.
So there was like a deck-building game I played last year, and he came back this year and a couple of my friends played it and we debriefed about it a little bit and they were quite different experiences.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Cool. There's local devs or indie devs will also come and host and run their own games that are finished. So a couple years ago, I played Axolotl with a Gun, which is lovely. Mm-hmm. And then this year from the same people, I played, what was it called? Trash to Treasure, Magical Goblin Girls.
Magical Save, Girl Goblins.
Yeah, something like that. It's delightful. Basically, you play a magical girl shoujo where all of you are adorable little goblins with powers and you have to solve problems to save the world, and it is so good. I got to play Haze, which was the cute little purple engineer goblin.
Yeah.
Cool.
So then I also ran a couple events. I ran a couple games of Blades in the Dark, which I talked about on our tabletop episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that
you got to play Eat the Reich.
I got to play Eat the Reich. That was my highlight. Eat the Reich is a game that came out, I think, in late 2024.
Oh, okay.
And it is an all D6 system. Huh. You play vampires hired by the Allies in World War II, and you get airdropped into France or Germany, and you are told to go eat Nazis.
Ah, okay.
And drink their blood.
Okay.
And it is, honestly, given everything that's happened in Minneapolis in the past couple months, it was really cathartic.
Yeah, I imagine so.
And it was a fun table, and I wound up buying the rule book for it, so mm-hmm. I'm going to run it for my friends and my home table.
Nice.
At some point.
The image of airdropping vampires, and then they just like turn into bats as they fall or something. This is funny to me.
No, it's you're dropped in coffins without parachutes on
them. Oh. That's sillier. I like that.
And when the coffin shatters, you are injected with blood to heal your wounds immediately.
Ah.
Isn't it like nun's blood? Because it gives you the adrenaline burst to wake you up, too.
That's what our GM flavored it as.
That's hilarious. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's very fun. There's one like core module in the rule book, and then there's fan made modules, and we did a fan made one at the con. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I played a Dadaist, also D6 system called Troika exclamation point, and it was a module called Slate and Chalcedony.
I don't know how to pronounce that word.
I can't remember, but it was really, really fun. It was a weird Dadaist, very surreal kind of. It was just great.
Cool. Nice.
What have you been up to?
Well, I pitched Sledgehammer Bride to Melanated Game Kitchen.
Woo!
It was exciting. So it was the most popular of the pitches. There were 3 pitches total. People seem to be really enthusiastic about it. The thing about Melanated Game Kitchen, it's a bunch of people. It's a co-op. There's a bunch of people who are all working on this less than part-time. Progress on anything is very slow. So we had a planning meeting this past week, talking about it, and it went well. Like, people seem to be the things I was saying make sense, and all the things seem doable. I think our team is relatively art discipline sparse. We'll see how, but like the game doesn't require like a ridiculous amount of art. We just need somebody who has expertise in animation. We're in talks and figuring out how best to approach building the game.
That's awesome.
So I assume that I've already told Mark this. If this is the first time you're hearing this, Mark, sorry. I should have told you this well before now.
Yeah, and you've been doing stuff with Melanated Game Kitchen for a bit now,
yes,
right?
And it's been slow going, and I also am only dedicating a little bit of time here and there when I can. But I also am now currently the lead the community team that they have, which like we just like do community events every week. Mm-hmm. And the only reason for that is because the other person left and they needed somebody to temporarily do it. When they say temporary, it's like it's probably going to be permanent.
Ain't that always the way, though?
That's fine.
Is that a local co-op? Or
it is not. No, it's all over the place. Actually, most of the folks are in California.
Okay,
stuff.
Cool.
I'm the only person in the Midwest on the group, as far as I know.
The whole Midwest, wow.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
that's pretty typical for games.
I guess.
Unless it's Wisconsin, I think, guess.
It's typical for games and typical for black people, so.
Yeah.
Okay, fair.
Yeah,
fair.
Not wrong.
So, it's been cool. I appreciate being in the space. People, you know, that I feel respected and I respect other folks in there, and that's important.
That's awesome. That's
sometimes
brilliant.
You work in a place and you don't have that feeling, and that sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's been good.
Yay.
Mm-hmm. I see here on the notes that y'all have been playing Blippo Plus.
We have.
We have. We started it, I think, last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it is a delightful game.
Isn't
yeah.
it though?
It's so good.
It's so charming.
I am hoping that we finish it before I have to go to GDC, mm-hmm. or finish it very, very soon after I come back from GDC.
I think we're a little over halfway through at this point,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
It's really... The fact that it is so passive is really cool. And you have to... It's a little like Animal Crossing in that sense, where you have to enjoy it at a relegated pace.
Yeah,
you cannot speed through it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's obviously much smaller than Animal Crossing, but having that slow pacing and getting to sort of unravel the mystery that's going on in Blippo Plus, but also just get the little mindless entertainment bits, mm-hmm. throughout all of it, it's so fun. We're treating it like Sunday morning cartoons.
Oh, that's great.
Basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Because we have our Switch set up in our bedroom with the TV there, mm-hmm. and we'll just have morning coffee and watch through a couple the packets, they're called, the sets of episodes, yeah. that they have. It's delightful.
Yeah, that's cute. Would you say that it's a cozy game?
I would say it's cozy.
Yeah, good transition.
I did it.
Cozy games is pretty broad.
Yes.
I think we should start with like what makes a game cozy.
Yeah.
In general, what at least from my sense of cozy game needs to be low stakes, mm-hmm. not violent. In that like. FPS is probably not cozy.
Right.
I really wish that I could find this again. If someone out there can find this article, someone wrote an article or did a video where they essentially were making an argument that cozy is not the right word, but it is slow games.
Sure.
Is what it should be called.
I would prefer that, personally. I don't find cozy, quote unquote, cozy games to be particularly cozy.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
But the thing for me also that I think is a hallmark of cozy games is that they have very clearly broken down tasks.
Sure.
Now, that might be because I find that very cozy and comforting because my brain really appreciates when that exists. But that is something I will append. Mm-hmm. And in general, it typically is associated with like warm feelings, wholesomeness, some whimsy, some joy, often cute.
Yeah.
Cozy games end up being stressful because people get too capitalist and min-max the cozy out of their fucking cozy games.
So I think cozy games, I think the word cozy, again, is way too broad. I do like slow games as an option.
Which is interesting because you would think that slow games would be more broad than cozy.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, though, because you're right in that cozy games often have tasks to delegate either to yourself or in some automated fashion
when you
get into it. But I think a lot of like simulator games is kind of the origin of this.
Mm.
Yeah, because I would classify something like Euro Truck Simulator as kind of a cozy game.
Yeah.
Because it still gives you, I don't play a lot of those like driving simulator games, but I have experienced them at least.
Mm-hmm.
And I get the same feeling from a truck simulator as I do like a Stardew Valley.
Yeah, and there are people who in real life find the act of driving to be very soothing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so for them, doing a simulation of driving is also pretty soothing.
Nailing it down to simulator games for me, it kind of pushes back on them having to be wholesome and whimsical. I think that has become sort of a core tenet of a lot of the more popular ones.
Yeah.
For sure.
So like Stardew Valley, I would say like Unpacking is often cited. A Little to the Left is a very cozy puzzle game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think there are aspects where most of these things that you've laid out can be altered or pushed back on and it still be cozy.
Yeah.
Because the first thing that came to mind for me was Slime Rancher.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, by all means, a first-person shooter game.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
You're just, you know, vacuuming up your slimes and launching them out again.
Is it shooting or slurping? It's still an FPS.
It's kind of both.
It's a first-person slurping game.
First-person slurper. So I think of something like Slime Rancher as a cozy game because you do have, you start with a bit of a farm, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to sort of unpack the world. The world gets revealed to you as you progress, much like Stardew Valley. You don't have the caves right away. You don't have that secondary dungeon in the desert right away.
Mm-hmm.
You have to expand the parts that you actually have access to by doing these little delegated tasks early in the game, right? So that was the first game that I thought of.
Yeah.
Topic here.
Yeah.
You get stressed out from cozy games.
Yes. So part of the problem I have with the name cozy games, they don't feel cozy. I guess it feels like work. I feel like I have to optimize it.
Oh, you see, this is where I think that is a you problem.
And sure. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying cozy games are a bane on humanity.
No. I think in the sense that I as a person. Mm-hmm. My job is so often to make decisions and to bring things out of either mess and chaos or out of nothing.
Sure.
And so when I'm given simple goals and simple instructions, I find that so satisfying because I, at the end of the day, and Ina's seen this, I end up with such bad decision paralysis and decision fatigue that there are sometimes like I physically cannot tell you an answer if you ask me something like, do you want a glass of water?
Sure.
Like I can't. And so like for me, the coziness is, I mean, people joke about roguelikes as oh my gosh, it's my favorite thing. I get to choose between three options.
Yeah.
And it's like truly that is so nice for me.
Well, like, I like roguelikes.
Yeah.
And I like roguelikes partly because of that choice. The interesting choices behind that, I suppose, in a different way than how you describe it.
I guess the thing is, I don't take the next step to how can I optimize this?
Sure.
I live in the, oh, what is my next goal?
Yeah, I feel like, Steven, you're saying you prefer your escapism to be even less realistic.
Well, okay, so I'll take Stardew Valley specifically.
Okay.
Because, I had a hard time with that game. And the reason for it is because you can only do so many things in a day. And you only have so much energy that you have, at least at the beginning. Eventually, you get more ways to get more energy, right? As far as I understand.
Yes, you do.
But when I first started out, I was like, well, I only have this much energy and this much time, so I have to do this, 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 this. And I'm not exactly sure what thing I should do first, because I don't have enough information to determine whether or not this is the thing I should do or this thing I should do. And so I was like, well, I guess I don't know where to go.
That is one benefit of Animal Crossing, where you're forced to be slow right away.
Animal Crossing is a different kind of stress for me, because that game encourages you, not encourages, it pressures you into playing it every day. And so I felt the stress of having to play it all every day, even on days when, like, you know, I was like out of town or I was busy and I shouldn't be playing this game for the 5 minutes I need to play or whatever. And then if you miss a day and you come back, then all the villagers around you are like, oh, where were you? And I'm like, oh no, I can't leave these people.
But that's
a me problem. Because
no,
I'm
that is
guilt prone.
That is also a me problem, 100%.
So I think that's what I have a hard time with respect to the framing of calling cozy games, is because they have a lot of aspects that, you know, are chill, and they're intended to be chill. But I think that, like, some of the things might steer people the wrong way.
Yeah.
At least me.
What about something like cozy puzzle games like A Little to the Left or Unpacking?
I haven't played either of those, so I don't
know. Oh, okay.
But those feel more like puzzle games to me, as far as I understand them.
Well, I was still, they are low stakes, they're nonviolent. No. Like, they have clear tasks, and the vibe that they bring is very chill, relaxing, and wholesome, very whimsical.
What I meant is that, like, they don't feel like a Stardew Valley and that, like, I have to keep doing it over and over.
Well, I guess that's what I was saying is, like, would you say that those are cozy?
Oh, or, sure.
And, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I would say that they're cozy games. They seem chill enough. Those seem more vibe focused. I mean, like, Blueprints feels kind of cozy in some ways to me too. And in other ways,
it is a slow game. For
it is very slow. Yeah, in good or bad ways.
Right.
I think that, like, it, if I were to develop a quote unquote cozy game, I think I would just focus on people's and making sure that people have tasks to do. And giving them. I think ideally I would give them limits on how much that they could do the tasks every day or something like that. But not necessarily pressure them into playing it. Like, if people are coming, I think people are playing cozy games for the vibes. So, like, you just want to bring them the vibes and not bring them other things that make, that might make a quote unquote more compelling game. But, like, and that feels disingenuous to, like, cozy games. I'm not trying to say that cozy games aren't compelling, but I think that, like, you just want to focus on making sure that those vibes are there.
Yeah.
Adding extra things. Like, I think even Stardew Valley has, like, the dungeons and stuff.
Right.
That you can fight in. That seems weird to me.
Yeah. I think there's games that kind of cross into visual novel territory that kind of meet this.
Yeah.
Coffee Talk and Valhalla come to mind. Or VA 11 Hall A, however you want to pronounce it.
Okay.
Because that's the I think, technical name of it. But it's like a bartending simulator.
Yeah, yeah.
And you are given, like, the recipes, and you keep meeting the same faces over and over, your customers, and it feels very visual novel-esque. But you do have these tasks behind the scenes that you're always keeping track of, and you do make money to sort of, I think, renovate your apartment. You get stuff for your apartment in Valhalla, if I remember correctly. And you have to, like, feed your cat, but the cat, I don't think, can have consequences. Like, there's not a lot of negative consequences in that game. So it still feels lower stakes, but you are in sort of a dystopian world, so you're getting the lore of that as you're going along. That also registers in my mind as cozy, and I haven't finished the game. I've bounced off of it a couple of times, just for whatever reason. I didn't enjoy the gameplay very much, but I loved the world and the story, and it was very comfortable.
It sounds like for things like Animal Crossing and Stardew Valley, you need more built in the you can't do everything and that's okay.
Yes.
Like that as a very clear, undeniable, explicitly stated somehow premise.
Yeah, I think like when I had it, it's kind of weird too, because like I'm not really, well, I don't think of myself as a completionist. But I think that like the way that Stardew Valley presented time in that like you had seasons, and if you didn't do a thing during this season, you would miss out on it for a whole year. And I'm like, I don't want to waste my time playing through a whole year to get to this part again. So I was like, so I got to get this stuff now. That felt like a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
In a way that, like, maybe the game is probably not putting all that pressure on me. And to be fair, I'm sure that there's the actual time sensitivity is not as extreme as my mind made it seem.
Yeah, I feel like, if anything, there is a part of me that, I mean, I joke, it's like it's a you problem, it's a me problem. But I do think that there is something about cozy games where if you don't find them cozy, there is something to learn about that. Because I personally found Animal Crossing interesting because I didn't play it until New Horizons, never played an Animal Crossing game.
Sure.
And that game taught me that it's okay to not, if you don't have, how do I phrase this? There's nothing more that you can do in this game today, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You can just stop playing the game.
Yeah.
And I think that there's also, with Stardew Valley, the sense of it's okay to not do everything in one day or everything in one season because there will be another one.
Sure.
And I think they do, to some extent, facilitate that because for the first 3 years, I think, every season, every like second or third spring or whatever, you get new seeds opened up. Mm-hmm. You get new produce that you can grow because they are available in the store. And so there's a little bit of a sense of, well, if we're not enjoying a cozy game, is it because we are not letting ourselves enjoy the cozy game? I think that there are certain things that are easier to access that part for some people than others. Like,
yeah.
I play Minecraft very much like a cozy game.
Sure.
I don't understand when people get super engineery about Minecraft and they're like, well, I've automated these things and I made this thing and I made this thing. And I'm like, but you're automating yourself out of a game. I just want to build a house and have chickens and go on week-long adventures.
The automation might be part of the cozy for them.
I know. Yeah, that's the thing. Is,
oh, yeah, you're saying.
For them, that's part of, that's their cozy. Mm. I don't understand it.
Sure.
Because I'm okay with not having everything super, like, min-maxed, automated, like that. And so for me, my cozy is, I just get my chickens and I take it one day at a time.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of that is because, you know, that's the only way that I can access that feeling. I feel a lot of pressure as a human day to day to have the most productive day possible. And that almost never happens. And for some reason, games like that just make it click in my brain. So for me, like, my learning is how to have that in, how to apply that in daily life. Maybe for you, it's how do I achieve that mental, like, how do I make that click in games? Do you know what I'm saying?
A little, yeah.
A little bit, yeah.
I think because, like, I'm trying to think about, like, the design of how these games are built. What turns those kinds of things on in, like, people's heads?
Well, I think some of it is you're clearly, talking just between the three of us, some of it is you're not going to have everybody. It's not going to be cozy for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
I love puzzles. Mm-hmm. I think that I can totally see how even a little to the left would be absolute rage bait for some people.
Sure.
And then the nice plink plonky music in the background would make it even worse for them.
Oh yeah, okay, I get that.
Right?
Yeah, that makes
sense. It's mocking you.
Yeah. And so, but also, like, any game that relies on total min-maxing and absolute mastery of systems to me is not going to be cozy. And then, but it might be for someone else.
I think
I like fighting games and I find them cozy in a lot of ways.
Sure. I think simulation games can get into that too. Like, yeah. City Skylines relies a lot on min-maxing your systems, your traffic systems, your public utilities, that kind of thing. And I find it really calming until things start going wrong.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then it's really bad.
Yeah.
But I do like simulation games for that. There's something about the orderliness that really satisfies me.
Yeah.
So, but I'm not good at it. So,
yeah, a game I haven't played but always seemed really appealing to me is the Power Wash Simulator.
Yeah.
Like, that seems like super.
A lot of people cite that as the archetypical.
It's just do this thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that seems right. Like, it feels like it then, and that's all the whole game. Like, I think it times you and stuff.
I think,
but like, you don't think you get scored based off of your time.
I think there's an aspect of Power Wash Simulator specifically where level design is very important.
Mm-hmm.
because there's something so satisfying about cleaning all the nooks and crannies of something.
Yeah.
The one that always sticks out to me is there's in the first game, I think there's a playground.
Yes.
That you have to clean all the playground equipment.
Mm-hmm. And it's got the, like, you know, those squishy grounds?
The rubber
mats.
Those
squishy rubber things that are different colors, and they've got all the structures.
And I always think about cleaning, like, the slides and the underside of the slides.
Sure, yeah.
Like, it's not something that you... There's a very comical thing about Power Wash Simulator where every surface is filthy.
Yeah.
So there is sort of a suspension of disbelief there.
Sure.
Or suspension of belief. But it's still very fun, I think, to see just the nice... the color change, see something so shiny underneath it, underneath the grime, and using different tools to clean all the different stuff. And there's, I think the levels are made so nicely where you have to traverse it very thoroughly to finish the level.
Yeah.
You have to explore everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And the exploration paired with the way that you change the level, the only way you can interact with the level is by cleaning it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so satisfying to me.
I think it's, so if we can distill this into what is a good formula of things you can have in a cozy game, I think clear objectives and tasks, I think straightforward, maybe not even simple, but straightforward mechanics.
Straightforward is a good
phrase. I would say kind of in between, like with the level design for something where you traverse an area, mixed with like a and kind of like a puzzle game like Invento or A Little to the Left, but also a little bit like Stardew Valley, is you can see the whole situation.
Yes.
And understand the situation before you.
Yes.
There is no chaos.
Yes.
And I think that slow pace, or maybe not slow pace, but the fact that it is player regulated pace.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
That's great.
Yeah, because like I know that we both play Blueprints, mm-hmm. and you know, you can play it in different ways. You can go as fast as you want and see how you go. You can go as slow as you want and never actually press the shift key to stroll, quote unquote, or jog through the house.
Yeah.
And both are very valid, mm-hmm. but because you and I have that ability, like we can kind of take it both person to person, but also day by day, right?
Literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the way that you broke that down. And I think that straightforwardness is at least in my mind, is an important part of a cozy game. If you understand if you can understand fully what the game is,
mm-hmm.
then you can take it as it is. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel like there's hidden mechanics that you need to be thinking about or trying to figure out as you're playing through it.
I think as an extension of that, and the thing that makes cozy games have that double-edged sword, mm-hmm. is it is self-complicating, and if it's complicated, it's the player's fault.
Mm.
So in the sense of Power Wash Simulator, you could go about it a very complex way, but you might overlook something, and that's your problem if you end up stressed because you didn't go through things as thoroughly enough or in a way that worked with the environment. And
right.
you, mm-hmm. The other one I was thinking of in relation to Power Wash Simulator was the game about digging a hole.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. If you make a complex tunnel system when trying to dig your hole, that's your fault.
Yeah.
For the record, it is just called A Game About Digging a Hole.
Right.
For anyone who is maybe not familiar with this.
No, your goal is you dig a hole.
Yeah.
That's it. Very much in that vibe.
You can trap yourself, if I'm not mistaken.
You can trap yourself. You could make you have full license to make a complex tunnel system, but if you do, is that going to then stress you out? Yeah, but that's not because the game made that system complicated. It's because you made the system complicated. Stardew Valley, you can have like 5 crops at a time and that's it. Or you can make a like crazy fermented industrial complex where you're just like flooding the market with jams of every sort.
Sure.
And that is entirely paced by you, the player.
Well, there are seasons. I don't fully understand how Stardew Valley. I only played it for a few.
Yeah, there are.
No, I mean in terms of like amount of stuff on your farm.
Sure. Okay. Gotcha.
So like you can say like I'm going to have an industrial complex where I'm going to grow this many things and it all goes into kegs and I have every keg must always be operational.
Mm-hmm.
These are also things that operate regardless of season.
Oh.
So there's a greenhouse that operates all the time, and then there are There's barn animals that mm-hmm. operate year-round.
So, like, you could just have mayonnaise production be your only thing, and that is all year, all season, all the time.
There are people who, when they sort of get bored with Stardew Valley, they will say, I'm going to make a farm that only produces this type of good. They're only jams or something. Sure. And it takes a lot longer to progress in the game because you make a lot less money starting off.
Yeah.
But, like, I suppose you can...
But they're finding the fun in it.
Yeah. I actually tried a Stardew Valley run where I didn't buy anything from a store. That was my goal, was to self-produce everything. And then I realized, oh, dang, I'm not going to be able to buy a backpack upgrade. Which was the one thing where I was like, oops. But that in itself is really interesting and fun because, well, how do you go about doing that? You have to be a little bit more mindful. I don't know. Cozy games for me also feel very mindful.
Yeah.
And whatever access. And the thing is because, like, you know, mindfulness and meditation and that stuff is very difficult to achieve. Yeah. Whatever you end up finding to be the thing, whether it is washing dishes or walking meditation or sitting still, you know, those are, however you can access it is valid.
Yeah. I guess, like, the core tenet of these cozy games is relaxation, right?
Yeah.
You want players to be able to be in the moment and vibe in the game that you're playing. And I think that, like, that can be achieved through a number of means. It doesn't even, like, a quote-unquote cozy game doesn't necessarily have to be the way that you vibe.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, when that state of zen, I guess, happens, it's a form of understanding. In that moment, you're in that moment, and you understand all that is going on that is important right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if there's a. It's interesting how, as developers, we could find a way to express that through play. From players and allow players to have the agency to create that moment for themselves.
Yeah.
It's a difficult challenge. Mm-hmm. And I don't envy people who are making cozy games to make that, because, like, it's hard. And as somebody who has had such a hard time with cozy games, I think that, like, it's a difficult challenge. Yeah. But one worth pursuing.
I do want to give a honorable mention to non-cozy games.
Yes.
Specifically cozy horror games.
Dread.
Because cozy games make the perfect partner for horror mechanics.
Ah, okay.
So think about it in... The one that I think is very obvious is that something sinister lurking under a perfect facade is a very good premise for a horror game.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's why Doki Doki Literature Club works. It's like, oh, this is a cute dating sim girl. Like dating sim with cute schoolgirls, mm-hmm. and then, oh my god, what's happening?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Dredge, probably. I've not played Dredge, okay. But kind of similar idea, yeah. I'm sure. It's very much why, for example, like, horror works so well with things like sitcoms, as where it's like, oh, this is a sitcom, but something's not quite right, or like a kid, you know, a kid's show where it's like, oh, something's really wrong here, or a perfect golden family.
I think there's also, this game is maybe more explicit in the pairing, but I think Cult of the Lamb
hits
that really well too, because it's right out the gate, it is shown to be like sort of an Eldritch horror type thing.
Yeah.
But then the juxtaposition is later on, you learn, oh, it's a city management game.
Yeah.
It's you're building a little village and you have to go and do the dungeon crawling part to support your village.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels like it adds the cozy part second, but they do still pair extremely well together.
Yeah.
And it is the village management part is a very calming, task driven,
mm-hmm.
you know, set of systems.
Right. And ultimately your goal is to literally create a cult where you have sacrifices and all these other things. So
right.
Horrific.
But yeah. Don't worry about that part, but like
that pair,
the pair falls in line with what Lydia's talking about. Juxtaposition. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think also horror games work very well because a lot of very compelling or kind of hallmark horror games have very simple mechanics done under existential pressure. I mean, classic is from when I was in high school with Slenderman.
Ah, yes.
Your goal is you have to find all the pages. That's the only thing you have to do. You walk around and you find the pages. Very simple task, very straightforward. But oh my gosh, like you are going about it, you are experiencing a thing.
Right.
You also could have like you know, puzzles, or you have to hide and move around a space stealthily.
Yeah.
You have very simple goals that the environment then has the chance to, you have the chance to actually experience whatever mood is happening, whatever sinisterness or vibe they are trying to build.
Yeah.
And you're also trying to focus on this particular task of like, make sure that you accomplish it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, honorable mention to that. If I think maybe it would be interesting, and this could be something we look at later or talk to someone who actually does this sort of thing in their development. I feel like maybe we could learn a little bit more about the nature of cozy games and like kind of how you get to cozy.
Yeah.
By looking at how cozy horror games or cozy whatever games, like the hyphenated types of games work, mm-hmm. because of the contrast, essentially like the contrast to then illuminate the nature of the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need to put your emphasis somewhere.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think it can be more heavy on the horror stuff, and the juxtaposition works, but you have to present it as a horror game,
mm-hmm.
versus putting all the emphasis on the cozy stuff and then adding the horror stuff later. You get a different reaction from the right. player
yeah.
in that sense.
Oh man, I would fall off a game so hard if it was cozy and then became a horror game.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Doki Doki, for sure.
Yeah,
yeah. I stayed away from that game because I know enough about it to know that I don't want to play.
They're coming out with a second one.
Why?
Are they really?
Yeah.
I think Subnautica kind of fits that.
Oh, yeah.
That's another
yeah.
game I stayed away from because I heard it was scary.
There you go. you know your limits.
Mm-hmm. Y'all should join our Discord. Nicegames.club/Discord. Are you on our Discord, Ian?
I'm on the Discord, yeah.
Okay, good.
I don't use it a ton, but I am on there.
What would help you use the Discord more frequently?
Playtesting.
Playtesting?
Playtesting. Yeah. Oh!
No, I'm saying we're playtesting the Discord right now.
Well, that's oh. But also, we could...
I think playtesting could be a fun thing to include for things that yeah. the nice hosts make, especially around game jam times.
Yeah.
If you... Maybe that's not playtesting so much as, here's a thing that we did.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to promise that we're going to hold any playtesting sessions because that's more work and we don't get paid to do this.
That is a big promise. I won't ask for that.
But what else would you want?
Yeah, yeah.
I enjoy the things. So I mostly use Discord to talk with real life friends
sure.
when we are not together.
Mm-hmm.
So I think creating those social aspects within the Discord is always what I gravitate towards.
Well, one of the things that I especially since we've started back up again is there have been more conversations about our most recent episodes.
Yeah.
And I love reading people's thoughts on what we've said in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And it also provides additional context into things that like we only have an hour to talk about these things. Each topic is only 30 minutes.
Sure.
So and sometimes we go on and on about random other stuff.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have additional conversations. Go to
nicegames.club/Discord.
You can include yourself in those kinds of conversations.
Exactly.
Potentially with your real life friends.
Potentially. I need to invite them to the Discord mm-hmm. and tell them about the podcast itself.
Yeah.
And where would you direct your friends, our friends, to go do that?
I would direct them to nicegames.club.
/Discord.
I thought you just meant for the podcast. Sorry.
No. To the Discord, where you can talk.
Yes. Okay, I have a topic. My topic is fast travel.
Zoom.
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 AKA the Zoomies.
We're here to debate public transit.
The answer is yes.
The answer is yes, absolutely. I want to talk about fast travel because I think that it's... you can kind of... Games didn't use have fast travel. Like Legend of Zelda, the NES game, did not really have fast travel.
Mm-hmm. But most of the series does.
Yes, most of the series does. And a lot of the games, a lot of modern games, AAA games, are large enough where they feel required almost.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to talk about it because like I think that fast travel adds a lot of important things to the game, but I think that it also can be a sign of things that detract from certain aspects of the game.
Ooh, yeah. Expand on that.
Yeah. So, okay. So one of the things that I've noticed that is when I start doing a lot of fast traveling in a game mm-hmm. is when I recognize that I'm not having as much fun with the game.
Yeah.
So like when I would play Skyrim, for instance, I would just walk around the world, pick up ingredients so I could do alchemy or whatever. And then I enjoyed that. But eventually I would start like being like, oh, well, now I got to go to Whiterun and do a thing. So I would just fast travel to it instead of walking over there because mm-hmm. it'd take too long. Then I'm like, well, now I'm just doing or going from point to point to point to point and not like doing the stuff, exploring the game, experiencing the game. And then I'm like, well, am I even enjoying this game? Then it starts making me reevaluate how much enjoyment I'm having at that moment.
I find a lot of games that utilize fast travel are also games that are at least partially about exploration.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
Weird.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Breath of the Wild did this for me, and also Tears of the Kingdom to an extent, because it is a massive world. Yes. Right? Mm-hmm. And there are well over 100 fast travel points if you fully complete the game.
Yeah. Because
it's every single shrine, as well as like the towers that make the maps show up. The towers themselves, I think there's only about a dozen, if I remember correctly. And then there's like the major dungeons. You can fast travel to those once you find them as well. But adding in every single shrine as a fast travel point really trivializes. You only explore the world once.
Yeah.
Sure.
And in Breath of the Wild, you could kind of get away with it because it was just that one overworld. Tears of the Kingdom, it felt really egregious.
Yeah.
Because it also has this underworld that also has 100 some odd fast travel points. There are caves in the overworld that occasionally have a fast travel point, but they're very easy to miss when you're exploring. Mm. And if you say you get a fast travel point in the overworld and you don't notice the cave by it, when you're naturally exploring that area, you might never notice it.
Yeah.
Because if you fast travel there, you're only going because there's a destination nearby.
Yeah. Zelda's a good, Breath of the Wild, and Tears of the Kingdom, I think, are really good examples of that kind of sign. Because, like, when I was playing it, even if I had gotten a lot of the shrines in an area, I would still walk to places or I guess, ride Epona or whatever.
Right.
To places to get where I wanted to go, partly because, like, there's so much stuff packed in each individual section of the game that I'm like, I'll find new things and that'll be fun. But eventually you stop doing that.
And it's a pity because those games do exploration so well. Tears of the Kingdom, really, you had potential to explore the world in a very fun way.
Yeah.
Because of all the contraptions you could make. People made vehicles.
Yeah.
Relatively quickly. They designed like pretty efficient flying vehicles. Mm-hmm. There's the one that I think was just two fans and a control stick that you basically make a hover bike.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
And it's very fun to explore the world in such a novel way compared to Breath of the Wild, which is largely the same overworld map, but you could only do it on foot or on horseback, or if you fully completed the game, you got a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Which I always thought was very funny. But as soon as you find these fast travel points, it you don't feel compelled, I don't feel compelled at least, to re-explore or further explore that area.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which means I'm never going to get all of the Korok seeds. There's probably side quests that I'm going to miss.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, nobody should get all the Korok seeds.
No one, because it's like 900 or something.
Yeah, it's absurd. But I think that like, it's kind of a catch-22 sort of thing, because like, if a game is so big that like, it requires you to travel between points without having the fast travel aspect, then you're wasting time. Not like if you're exploring it, but like if you're just going through the same path you're going through over and over again and nothing new and interesting is happening between that, then you're just living life.
Yeah.
And that's not why you're playing a video game. So because worlds have gotten so large, fast travel is basically required. But I think that you can implement fast travel in a way that can make engaging with that system more interesting, more valuable, and more beneficial to the exploration of a game.
Yeah. I find that fast travel makes me more divorced from the world to a certain point. One of the things that I really love walking through Skyrim, I love traveling. And one of the things is because there are little moments that you don't notice necessarily.
Yeah.
So there's this area outside of an inn where a couple was going to elope and they got killed by a tiger or something. I saw their corpses. I saw the evidence. I killed the tiger. That was the first thing you see, or I don't know what it is. bear, maybe? Anyway.
There's a lot of pack animals.
Yeah.
It was not a pack animal, a solitary hunter, but you know, you get the point.
All right.
And I, as a person, was like, found the notes and got to see the story. I'm like, oh, this is wonderful and beautiful and sad. And so what I did is I actually took the engagement ring that they had collected. It was like a silver ring with a gem. I went back to a blacksmith and I made two gold rings. And I was going to leave the gold rings on their bodies.
Aww.
That was because I was so touched. Got back and I went to the same area. Scene had been totally cleaned up and a little shrine to one of the gods.
One of the gods, there, yeah.
The goddess of love.
Oh.
So someone had cleaned up the corpses, cleaned up the area, and basically like enshrined, like left an offering to the god to mark where they had died.
Yeah. Huh.
So I didn't get to give them their rings, but I would not have noticed that if I had fast traveled and just bopped around everywhere. Mm-hmm. When Bethesda made Starfield, I remember thinking just, they're going to lose that because the thing about space is that there's nothing between the planets. There's nothing between locations. And what I love so much about Skyrim was the stuff that was in between locations.
Right.
So, and so, I don't know. That was the thing that kind of, like, I never wanted really to play it. On the other hand, I was thinking like, oh, Redemption, which I still really want to play. Mm. Sounds like Skyrim, but Wild West.
Yeah.
Totally sounds great, and I want to do that. So having stuff in between that makes it worthwhile either from a narrative aspect or an ambient aspect or from a logistic aspect. So like, hey, I have to walk to Riften. I know there's some water nearby. I might as well follow the river there and get some Nirnroot because I'm going to need some Nirnroot. Yeah. The other thing that I think is an interesting aspect is how do you employ the fast travel? So Ian's main criticism is there's too many fast travel points.
Sure.
How do we feel about a little bit more a almost public transit style fast travel system like in The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, where you have certain teleportation places, but they bring you to a specific location?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or something like, I mean, it could literally be a form of public transportation. Like there are you get on the train and you get to a stop and then you have to walk the rest of the way.
Yeah, yeah.
How do we feel about those kinds of fast travel?
I think that makes sense. I think it does depend on the world you're building. But I think that like that can make sense for the game.
There are methods of fast travel that feel consistent with the world.
Yes.
That feel great. And
honestly,
you could do an entire episode of this and just talk about the Legend of Zelda series.
True.
But I think of Wind Waker because the fast travel in that is magical, because you have to like summon a tornado basically.
You have to unlock it. Yeah.
You have to unlock it. Yeah. It's one of the songs that you play, but the tornado can only dump you in like 8 different locations.
Right.
And most of them are not a heavily populated island. They're maybe 1 or 2 away from one of the hub areas.
Mm-hmm.
I think one takes you directly to Windfall Island. A lot of them are just out in the ocean somewhere, and you have to still navigate your way to the population center. I like that a lot as smaller. Granted, it's a much smaller game. It was released in like 2003.
Yeah.
So only having 8 or 9 points like that makes a little more sense, but it's the world still felt vast.
Yeah.
And you had to explore a bit around those fast travel points.
And stuff would happen while you were going between points.
Exactly.
Like random events and things. That is a better aspect than like the way Skyrim does it, where like literally everywhere you find is a fast travel point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's too much.
Yeah.
I almost never use the horse and carriage because like narratively it makes more sense, but you have to pay money and it only goes to the main holds.
Yeah. And it's like also you could just fast travel there and do the same thing.
I would much rather have it only be the horse and carriage and it take you to a couple holds, maybe a couple towns.
Yeah. So I basically made this topic to talk about Dragon's Dogma 2 because I love that game, man. I think it does fast travel in a very interesting way.
Okay.
That I've never played it.
Other people should at least look at to see if it makes sense for your game. Just look at how fast travel works and make sure that it fits and it enhances the game and doesn't just, you know, strip out fun exploration parts. But the way that fast travel works in Dragon's Dogma 2, there's 2 ways to fast travel. They added one from the first game. You can get, I think they're called Rift Stones, that like allow you to fast travel to particular points on the map.
Mm-hmm.
So similar to like Wind Waker, in that like you can only go to certain places. And there are big rift, I can't remember all the names of all the things.
Yeah.
But there's a big rift like point that you can have in your inventory and you can take out and place
in places that you want
like it. Like a beacon or an obelisk or yes. something that then just is a place, establishes it as a place you can fast travel to.
Yes. Okay. So like if you're like, I'm going to be doing a bunch of stuff in this area and I need to go back and forth between here and stuff, but you don't want to like travel there.
Make your own.
You could decide this is where I want to go in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But if you stray away from that, you have to come back to it because there's only like three of them mm-hmm. in the game.
That is cool. I like yeah. that. I think Tears of the Kingdom also does that, but not Breath of the Wild.
Can you pick it up and put correctly. It back down again?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you can move it. There's some that are like in big hubs.
Yeah.
They have a dedicated place. But there are just like a few that you can bring to places. And there's only like two dedicated hub kind of stones.
I like that a lot.
You can work.
I really
so,
like that.
So yeah, yeah. So you have to think about where you're placing the things. And also if you stray away from it, you have to come back. And travel in Dragon's Dogma 2 is dangerous because there's always enemies and stuff.
Mm.
So like you need to make sure you have enough resources to get back to wherever it is you left if you want to be safe. And in order to fast travel, you have to like have these rift stones, so you have to pay for them or find them. You can feel like a curve as in the beginning, everything is very resource limited. But once you get better at the game, you have a better understanding of the map and have a better understanding of, or have more currency, you literally can, it's a lot easier for you to fast travel
mm-hmm.
if you need it. Separately, it has a second form of fast travel, which is like the Skyrim board a horse, climbing back, and we'll be off sort of thing.
Yeah, or like there's the bus stop in Chicory, which is actually like a big bird.
Yeah, you have a transit ID.
You get a bus pass, and then it's just you get picked up by a bird and dropped off at a different bus stop.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a lot like that, but the way that it works in Dragon's Dogma 2 is periodically, as you're traveling, you won't like see it happen, but like you'll just suddenly you'll load up, you'll be being attacked by a giant griffin or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so like you have to deal with that, and then your fast travel, your wagon potentially gets destroyed, and then you have to make it the rest of the way yourself. And so like it adds a twist, like not all forms of fast travel require something.
Yeah. Oh yeah, this reminds me, if you're going to make it so I have to travel from point A to point B, you got to make sure that I have the agency of how I go about doing that.
Mm.
So I really hate hidden encounter overworld things.
Oh, sure.
I can't stand it. It just drives me nuts. If it's an overworld, I want to be able to see if there's a hazard and I want to be able to have the option to either go for it or go around it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like, it is just...
It is kind of the aspect of, especially the older Final Fantasy games, where when you get the airship, most of them, you can't have random encounters in the sky.
Yeah.
So there isn't, like, teleportation in... I'm thinking like Final Fantasy 4, 5, 6, that kind of era. There isn't teleportation, really, but you will eventually get an airship that allows you to traverse the whole map very quickly.
Yeah.
And with one major exception I can think of in Final Fantasy 6, there's like one hidden boss in the sky, basically. You just won't encounter stuff in the sky. So it's way faster to travel around. It doesn't necessarily unlock new stuff immediately. Yeah.
But like you have, since you have such familiarity with the map already,
yeah.
you just eventually scale up to a point where like you could just get to places that you need to get to quickly.
You still have your own agency about it. You're just moving around very, very fast.
Yeah.
I immersion breaking thing where I choose fast travel is because I want to get to a place. I know that if I have to get there myself, I'm going to be forced to do things that I don't want to do. Mm-hmm. And so I would much rather just teleport there and not deal with it. But if I'm able to avoid the things that I don't want to do and be able to do the things I do want to do along the way, I will take the long route.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like in Skyrim, I can stealth around animals and people and dragons, or I can just run away. Same for like in the Persona series, when you're in dungeons, you can avoid shadows and sometimes they still catch you, but you can still try to avoid and circumnavigate them if you don't want to fight. Yeah. And that is the thing that makes me... That is for me is the travel killer.
Sure, yeah. Personally. Well, yeah, because sometimes it just becomes more tedious. Like you, like I got to get from this point to this point, but like I might get 50 different fights on the way there, and I don't know because it's random.
Yeah.
And that could be annoying. Yeah, yeah.
I think I felt something like this when I played Silksong last year, because Hollow Knight and Silksong both have fast travel, and it's presented as a transit system in the world that you exist in. And Hollow Knight, the movement itself of the character is not pleasant for most of the game.
Yes.
It's slow, it's clunky, it's a good game combat-wise, looking back on it, but if you play Hollow Knight after you have played Silksong, it feels really slow.
I would imagine, yeah.
Yeah. Silksong, the movement is incredibly fun. Mm-hmm. And even though you get fast travel, if you get good at the movement in that game, it still feels really rewarding to just blitz through the game.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
Yeah.
There are still fights, but you can kind of, you know where the fights are generally.
You might be able to use that as navigation because you can bounce off of them, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. If you've got the maps and you know where the enemies generally are, you can still move through the world very quickly without the fast travel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other cool thing in Silksong is that there are two separate fast travel systems. Mm-hmm. There's one for one part of the world and one for the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And they connect at exactly one location.
Yeah, that was the thing I was also going to bring up, is if you have stationary fast travel points or in any way, then you have the onus on some interesting world building or level design, wherein if you can look at the map and go, all right, I need to go here, how do I want to get to that point from either of these available options?
Right.
And I think that's interesting too, because it could be like, oh, I want to approach from the north because I want to hit something along the way.
Yeah.
Or, oh, yeah, I want to go from the south because I think it's actually a little bit closer. That is, again, a level of choice and agency for the travel that then the player can make and decide. If you don't have things in the right locations, where either they are convenient or they are too frequent or not frequent enough, mm-hmm, or the routes that you could take from those areas to other areas aren't not interesting routes in themselves, then that choice doesn't really matter. You're just going to pick the fastest.
Yeah. Yeah. When there are fewer fast travel points, it puts a lot more weight on the design choice to temporarily remove access to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because Silksong does it in two different ways. In the very late game, there's a point where you lose access to a couple of fast travel locations. Mm. And then there's another point where you are just fully cut off from fast travel and you need to find your way through the world as if it was the start of the game again.
Right, right.
And both of those carry a lot of weight at the end of the game, especially.
Yeah.
When suddenly, oh, I was maybe relying on this to move around a lot to do my collectathon, whatever I'm finishing up before the end of the game.
But at the same time, you and your character are more capable to take on that challenge than you were when you first started.
Yeah, it's storytelling.
It is.
Yeah.
That's an important aspect. I think there's just a lot of ways that we can go about implementing fast travel that isn't just Assassin's Creed, you found a point, so now you can come back here whenever you want.
Yeah. I really wonder, people have figured out that humans have the same commuting time that they always have.
Hmm.
We're essentially like, as a society, we will always spend a maximum of like an hour commuting. Like, that is kind of the ideal amount of commute time.
Sure.
And so back in the past, when we had our feet or horse and wagon or whatever, the distance was quite small. But as we got newer and newer forms of transportation, you know, we were commuting farther, but we were still commuting the same amount of time.
Yeah.
And so I do wonder if there is something measurable like that when it comes to games in terms of
what's worth it to travel by foot versus fast travel.
Yeah. Is there kind of a games map fast travel equivalent of like the 15 minute city or the hour long commute by X?
Yeah.
And could you take advantage of that in different ways by essentially saying like, okay, you know, this is a reasonable like hour long commute by horse and buggy, which opens up these areas to you. But then within, like, when you travel to that point, we can reasonably expect people to want to travel and take on their own, like, locomotion and path within, like, this radius of the game map.
Yeah.
I think that'd be very interesting, especially when it comes, as, you know, people in general have been looking at city planning and spatial navigation within cities and green spaces and suburbs and all that fun stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. Talk to somebody who works on this kind of
stuff.
Talk
to a city planner.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. They would have so many insights on how like maps are built and how fast travel is involved in that. And it would be fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's to put on to have on the podcast in the future.
Well, I think that's also that would be kind of interesting to talk to them about the perception of time. Because the thing about fast travel is you don't experience anything. You might get a cutscene. But that's it. Like, you aren't spending that, like, an hour-long commute by train, you aren't spending that hour-long commuting by train. You are spending 30 seconds.
Right.
But assumedly, it takes you an hour away,
mm-hmm.
right? As opposed to when you're walking however many in-game units, however many real-life units.
You are actively walking, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. All of it's fascinating. There's more to this.
Yeah.
We'll have to talk about it at a later date.
Yeah. That's our show. For show notes and links on today's topics, go to our website, nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes delivered to you 1 week early. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. Discuss this episode or others, or whatever, with your fellow listeners on Discord. Stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello. Keep an eye out for the GDC 2026 special, but that's it for this week.
So, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.